When I was a little girl, my dad was fascinated with Nostradamus, the astrologer, physician, and doomsday prophet from the 16th century. At night, when I was supposed to be asleep in bed, I could overhear my father watching PBS documentaries on this man. And the narrator would weave a tale of how each of Nostradamus's predictions came true. In the dark, I became afraid about the world ending at some point, that people could discover that Nostradamus knew if you just read the signs the right way, if you just followed the code. Nostradamus was supposed to have predicted many world events over the centuries, from the Great London Fire in 1666, about 100 years after he lived, to the rise of Hitler and World War II. And this incontrovertible truth just deepened my fear, because at 7 or 8 years old, these were things that I didn't understand, and that lack of understanding built a fear within me. And as I got older, my dad would talk to me about Nostradamus, describing the various pathways that Nostradamus predicted humanity could take. Because I guess knowing what the future might hold allows one to correct the course to avoid the destruction of the world. But at every turn, humanity chose wrong. And we were on a path to the end. And Nostradamus isn't, you know, the only one who's predicted the end of the world as we know it. The Mayans had a calendar that went up to the year 2012. That was as far as we were to go. And, you know, I'm sure we all remember pretty well what happened about 20 years ago, the whole Y2K scare, right? We weren't sure that when those digital clocks were supposed to flip to the new millennium, if you know, nuclear fail-safe systems were going to work or not, and people were, you know, heading to the hills, and they were waiting for destruction to unfold, destruction that we brought on ourselves, right? Teacher, when will this take place? And what will be the sign that these things are about to happen? The disciples ask Jesus this morning. And I'm sure this is rooted in my childhood, but I just have a problem with passages like this one in the Bible. My first reaction is one of dis-ease, of anxiety. I feel unsettled. I want to hide under my covers like I did when I was a kid and pray that this doesn't happen. Or I want to, you know, rush to Home Depot and buy a generator and lots of gas and soup and water and protein bars for my family and stock up on the medicine that Claire and I need in order to survive and thrive. Right? And then within seconds, the other reaction I have kicks in, you know, the scoffer, the one inside of me where I sort of pragmatically look at things and I'm like, really? You know, really, I'm supposed to buy into this whole Armageddon doomsday thing? You know, a quick internet search of any of these sort of doomsday prophets of Nostradamus's predictions shows a lot of manipulation that has to happen on these obscure poems and verses that he wrote to make them match up with things like Princess Diana dying, or this past April, the Notre Dame fire that almost destroyed that cathedral in Paris. Nations will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes and famine and pestilence in various places, and fearful events and great signs from heaven. So says Jesus, our Lord. What are we to do with this passage? Do we live in fear, scanning the headlines that this flood or that famine is the sign of the end? Or do we just dismiss this type of passage as arcane, since, you know, the world hasn't ended yet, like Jesus predicted? And so do we then try and interpret this passage in the light of his context 2,000 years ago, and that it has nothing to do with us today, nothing to do with our life today? Well, I'm not satisfied with either of those options, because I can't dismiss Jesus' words as not true, because too often Jesus has spoken truth into my life. But I also can't imagine myself as the type of person to believe in doomsday predictions. But perhaps there's a third way here, in between the all or nothing, believe it or dismiss it categories. The disciples ask Jesus for the signs that will lead to the destruction of the temple, that most holy of places for Jews. And the things that Jesus tells his followers seem overwhelmingly catastrophic: earthquakes and famines, pestilence and war. Yes, these are fearful events, just as Jesus names them. But they are also not exactly common events, but they were certainly not uncommon events. War was well known during Jesus's time. Where Israel is in the Middle East, they are perfectly positioned to just be overrun by empire. You know, the Assyrians north of them, the Egyptians south of them, the Babylonians east of them. War was all they knew. And people 2,000 years ago might not know all of the, that we do now, the scientific impacts of and natural forces that can combine to create that perfect storm of a years-long drought that leads to famine. But such occurrences happened, you know, at least once a generation. They were not unusual. And with our worldwide view that we have now, hardly a month goes past where we don't have stories of natural disasters, of hurricanes bearing down on Caribbean islands that were already decimated last year, or, you know, another tsunami somewhere in Southeast Asia, or the wildfires that are consuming tens of thousands of acres in California a year after 86 people were killed in a town called Paradise. You know, we have cold that kills crops and soaring temperatures that kill seniors in their homes. Are these omens of the extraordinary? Perhaps the code we need to unlock these mysteries is found right here in this gospel passage. Sensing the awe that his disciples feel at the temple's grandeur, sensing too their unease at being confronted with the honesty of a tomorrow that holds fear and anxiety, suffering and certain death, because death is certain for us all. Jesus tells his closest followers to continue to trust in him, in their relationship with him, to have faith in God. When his disciples are arrested after Jesus' death, they do not need to worry about what they're going to say or about their well-being, because Jesus will always be with them, so much so that he says not a hair on their head will be hurt. And that endurance is how they will gain their souls. The thing is, if we truly believe the biblical witness, ever since we've left the Garden of Eden, we've experienced pain and suffering, often caused by ourselves or others. We've experienced wars and murders, betrayal and abuse. For countless millennia, we have been scared by the ground moving beneath our feet. This isn't to say that God causes the calamities we endure. I don't believe in a God that causes suffering and pain, either to teach us a lesson or to punish us. But it's rather to claim that God is active in the chaos and catastrophes, always working to help, comfort, and save. And when we recognize these things, we discover the opportunity not just to see and benefit from God's actions, but also to witness to it. Those of us gathered here this morning may not be persecuted and dragged before kings and leaders for our faith, but we will experience, we probably have experienced, and maybe right now we are experiencing trials and tribulations in our life that will test our minds and our emotional well-being. Jesus tells us this morning that God will not only help us endure these events, but will also give us the courage and words with which to witness to God, that God is in the very heart of that chaos. No matter where we go, no matter what happens to us, no matter how often it feels like our world is coming to an end, yet Jesus will be with us, protecting us and providing for us, that we may see God at work in our lives and give thankful testimony. Now, this isn't trying to find a silver lining in a bad situation or having a Pollyanna attitude about tough circumstances and great trials. Rather, I think that Jesus is offering us a way of understanding that encourages us to trust in God's deep love for us, to look for God. And because we are trusting and looking, we will see God at work in our lives, even in the most difficult conditions. Today's gospel passage is not about destruction and fear. It isn't about secret decoder rings and searching for omens. It's about hope. It's about the hope that we have when we truly and actively live the life of faith of following Jesus. Yes, there is hurt and ruin in this world. People all around us, including ourselves, are experiencing great pain and fear. And we daily live with challenges and setbacks, disappointments and tragedies. But God is here, already acting to comfort, heal, and care for those in need. In the midst of a world gone crazy, Jesus implores us to trust in him and then to share, to testify, to witness, to evangelize that great good news of God's deep love that is always lifting us up, even when we feel the most cast down.